Echo Chamber Escape Hatch is open. Give us 22 minutes and we'll give you a fresh perspective. It's the Kelly Nash Podcast.
Yeah, the echo chamber and the politically correct chamber and all of that. This show is really trying to be about truth. It's trying to be about delivering truth in a kind-hearted way. But the world is so concerned about feelings right now. My goodness, we are way off the path right now of where we should be. So we're going to take a look at a couple of stories today on the audio version of the Kelly Nash Podcast. Now, if you want the video version of this, you can go to Facebook or Twitter at Kelly Nash Radio is the handle, at K-E-L-L-Y-N-A-S-H Radio. YouTube, we got to look into seeing if we can change that handle. Right now, it's at K Nash Bash. K, the letter K, Nash Bash. So that's what's going on. And please subscribe to the YouTube channel, because apparently that would help me a lot from people who know those sorts of things. Even if you don't watch YouTube channels, just find the K Nash Bash YouTube channel and subscribe to it. I certainly would appreciate it. All right, here we are, back on the air. Okay, well, I say back on the air. It's not really the air, is it? I do the air on the radio every morning. I do this once a week. It's Kelly Nash. Happy to have you back with me. And if you're watching live, I'd love for you to comment. And the way you do that is whatever format you're on. If you're watching us on Facebook, comment, Twitter. What's the other thing we're on? Oh, yeah, Twitter and where's the other one? Oh, YouTube. Of course, YouTube. How did I forget YouTube? All right. YouTube is the important one, as you might have heard last week. We're looking to get 1,000 subscribers, and we're off to a rough start, being honest with you. Only picked up like 4 last week. So, but we're new. We're new to the game, and this is all going to be coming together nicely. I feel confident over the next few weeks and months. In the meantime, matter of fact, let me just do this. Rob Sanders showed me how to do that. The little subscriber thing right down there at the bottom. Bam. You see it? It actually scrolls. This is like such big league stuff. The stuff that they now have available on this StreamYard is like the stuff that, you know, a few years ago, you would have to pay thousands of dollars for it. And now any schmuck, including myself, can just come on here and do this. Remember, here, I'm going to put another one of these things up here. Does it just pop up? Yep, there you go. Love to hear from you. Post a question or thought in the comments. I'm also stalling slightly because I'm waiting for people to hopefully tune in and see some of what we're doing here this evening. But I see, well, wait a second, we got 2 comments. Man, look at that. Jonathan Reynolds is back, and in a big way. I don't know how I've been so fortunate to have Jonathan Reynolds watching both times that we've done this thing. But yes, StreamYard is amazing, Jonathan. Are you using it yourself? Probably. Jonathan's doing a whole bunch of ministry work, so I wouldn't be surprised if that's one of the tools in your tool bag. So I thought that tonight I wasn't going to be able to do this because I, not to bore you, but I thought I had a commitment and it fell through about an hour ago. So with that in mind, I said, well, let me get on here and try to keep that Tuesday night thing going. So that's what I'm doing. I'm trying to keep the Tuesday night thing going, and because you got to build momentum. And so first off, one of the things I want to just ask you about is if you are somebody who watches this, I'm assuming that you're hearing this because you're seeing it. what are your thoughts on the direction? Basically, all I'm looking at is Christian perspectives on news of the day. Now, perhaps you have specific news items that you would like me to get into. Perhaps you would like more, quote unquote, in-depth analysis. Right now, my initial feelings on the show are going to be try to keep it to under 20 minutes, 20 minutes or less, so it's easy to watch and or listen, because you can listen to the podcast, and we have that up everywhere, except I'm told we're not on Apple yet. And so I'm going to have to talk to Apple. But if you use just about anything else for your podcast, whether it's iHeart or Google or any of those little ones like Stitcher and whatnot, I think that the podcast is available there if you want to share it that way. But basically, almost like a, you know, just fire it off, fire it off. That's kind of how I'm feeling about these things. So what is popping in the news today? And then let's kind of take a little analysis of each one of these. So I was reading a story here in the New York Post just a little while ago, and I'm trying to find it on my phone again. Headline, man who admitted strangling wife during UK COVID-19 lockdown has been cleared of murder. So that's a story today where Anthony Williams, age 70, in Wales, this is his quotes, literally choked the life out of his wife of 46 years. Her name was Ruth. And the reason for this, according to his defense attorneys, was that he snapped after spending some time alone with her during COVID. He had retired from his job as a factory worker a few months earlier, had not been coping well in the aftermath of retirement, and then COVID hit. And he said to the officers, quote, "I am sorry, I just snapped. I am so sorry, I just snapped." When he called, he said, "She's dead. I've killed her. We had an argument, and I've strangled her." Now, this is where it gets interesting to me. Anthony says, quote, "I just flipped. But that wasn't me. I wouldn't hurt a fly. It wasn't me. I'm not like that. I don't know what came over me, but this isn't me." And apparently he agreed with a psychologist who testified that he had anxiety and depression heightened by the strict COVID-19 lockdown. And this impacted his inability to control his actions, the Independent reports. And then he was found not guilty today. So with that in mind, can we agree that that is him? So here's one of the things that I've, through my lifetime, before I was a Christian and now after I'm a Christian, that I've always found interesting is that people say that it's not them when something horrible comes out. They're caught cheating on their spouse. They beat up somebody. They kill their spouse. They do whatever it is that they don't want to do. And then they say, well, that's not the real me. Actually, that is the real you. The real you did that. The real you is in here all the time. And that's why we have to seek out a savior. You're a bad person. Not intentionally. You're filled with sin, though. You're born into sin. The Bible says it, and your life shows it. And it may not show it outwardly. You may be awesome at hiding whatever your sin issues are. And apparently Anthony, for 70 years, was able to contain himself. And then he snapped, as he says. Well, he relaxed enough to let the real him out, which is very unfortunate for his wife. But when we're born into sin, like the Bible promises that you all are and that we all are, then we have sin issues. And so the goal is... for most Americans, or most people on earth, I guess, is to hide the real you. It's to put out a front, a fake, a facade, something that shows the world the person you'd like to be. And we do that at one level most of our lives. Then there's this other level, like if you're going on your first date, that is the really fake you, right? That's the one where, you know, girls don't eat dinner. They have like a little thing of salad and guys are pulling out chairs and they're very, that's totally not them. That's a total fake. And I think everybody who's been on more than like 3 or 4 dates recognize that that person is not who you're going to be hooking up with as far as if you go into a long-term relationship. That within 6 months, this person is going to be behaving completely different. And if you're able to go long enough and get married, then that person probably is going to be different, you know, after 6 months, as opposed to 6 years of marriage. So it, now I'm not here to say that we're all murderers, but I think that being a murderer is a possibility in all of us. I'm saddened, but I'm never surprised if I hear somebody's murdered somebody. I'm also never surprised, although I am saddened, when I hear about a preacher having a moral failure. All of this is because of sin, which is in everybody. So whether you're reading about poor, what was her name again? Dot or whatever. She's been murdered out there in Wales, or even poor Anthony. Well, I guess not. Anthony's not as poor as he could have been, because he could have been doing life in prison, or in other countries he would have been executed. But he's going to, quote unquote, get away with it. But I'm sure he's going to be miserable for quite some time, because he's got to live with the fact that he murdered his wife, someone who he apparently loved enough to stay married to for 46 years. So, or if I'm hearing about Hillsong, every time I pick up the paper, it seems like this mega church, which if you're not really big into the Christian world, you might not have heard of Hillsong, but Hillsong is a massive worldwide conglomerate based out of Australia. So they've had scandals now in New York, Dallas, I think, Houston, back in Australia, two different places in Australia they're having scandals. None of that surprise, and it's not just obviously Hillsong, it's all churches. The men and women who work in ministry are men and women. They're not any better than you or I or anybody else. They're just human beings. And so when you're in a position that you've done something wrong, accept it. That is the real you. It may shock you how bad you really are. I know I've been shocked not necessarily by my actions, but sometimes by my thoughts. What do I think about certain people? I catch myself. The Bible talks about you got to control your thoughts. That's not easy to do. You got to control what you're looking at. You got to control what you're reading. You got to control what you're watching, and you got to control what you're thinking. There's a lot going on there. Pardon me. I have to take a sip of water. Okay. Another story coming to us out of New York today. This is the number one story above the fold, as they would say. Headline, New York City public schools now asking parents to reflect on their whiteness. And, This is a story. I guess it's based out of one school, Eastside Community School in Manhattan, has the eight white identities, which ranges from white supremacist down to white abolitionist. And you're supposed to rank yourself in here. This is a curriculum written by Barner Hess, associate professor of African American Studies at Northwestern University in Illinois. He says there's a regime of whiteness, and there are action-oriented white identities. People who identify with whiteness are one of these. It's about time that we build an ethnography of whiteness, since white people have been the ones writing about and governing all others. So, you know, we have now come to a time where I almost didn't think it would ever be possible. This is the exact opposite of what Martin Luther King Jr. had been talking about. We are now judging people on their level of whiteness, blackness, Asianness. Is that even a word? I don't know. But obviously, it's come to a time when being white is the bad thing. Now, if you're a Christian and you're wondering, well, how should I feel about my whiteness? You should feel the same way about your whiteness that you feel if you're an African American, feeling about your blackness or your whatever your race is. That is a gift from God, and there is no shame in any of it. If you were born, let me put it to you this way: if your parents are murderers, you may feel some shame about that. But is it your fault that they're murderers? No logical person would say, yeah. So then we'll just take it a little bit further, because I understand the argument that's being made by certain groups, and it's still truly a minority of the minorities that are making this argument. If you're a child of a murderer, who that murderer somehow got $1 million or $10 million or whatever it was, dollars, and then that sent you to a better school, and then you were able to get a great job based on your education, do you owe anything to the family that your parents murdered? That may be a difficult question for some people to answer, but the right answer is no, you don't owe anything to them. No, I'm afraid not. Now, I know that there's this feeling like, man, we really should have to give something back to that family. And you may want to give something back, but do you owe it to them legally? The answer is no, you do not. So what we're in a situation now where we have society, there's a small group of people who are blaming their lot in life, despite all outwardly evidence to the contrary, that because they were born a certain race in this country, that has set them back. And when I say it's despite all outwardly appearances or evidence, it's, you know, you can look at a great person to read is Thomas Sowell, who does a documentation of the fact that people born with black skin outside of America, especially those from the West Indies, when they move to America, they succeed at rates as high as native-born whites. Why don't they experience that systematic racism? Some may say it's because of the education system, that they had the benefits of being born in Jamaica or whatever, and then as a Jamaican, they had a better education because they didn't get oppressed here in American schools. But that argument breaks down when you realize that the vast majority of the people that we're talking about actually moved here as children. So they came here as 7, 8, 9-year-olds, and they did go through the American school system, and they did live in the same poor school districts that most minorities unfortunately live in. And yet they went through the same school system. They went through it, and then they came out the other end and they got jobs or they created businesses, and somehow they were able to succeed. And they did it. Some are saying in spite of it. I would say they're doing it because they're in America. But, you know, either here nor there, we're just going to put it to the side and just go back to the argument of the crew that says it's, you know, because you're born black in America, white people owe you something, some sort of money or whatever. They've already received an official apology for slavery and for other things. But, and then there was, you know, the Civil Rights Act, which was fantastic and really just reinforced what was already written down as laws. You know, unfortunately there were parts of America that did unconstitutional things, and they weren't overruled by the Supreme Court at the time. So there are definitely generations of African Americans who lived in America who had unconstitutional laws oppressing them. Now, that hasn't happened systematically. When they talk about systematic racism, that hasn't happened in most of our lifetimes. I'm 53. Yeah, I'm 53. It hasn't happened in my lifetime because the Civil Rights Acts were passed in the earlier 60s. But, you know, neither here nor there. What we're talking about is the fact that I am a beneficiary of being white in America, as are most of you who are watching, or as are most of you who are in America. But is that really true? The proof says no. But even if it was true, as long as the playing field is level now, you don't owe them anything. Now, that's just looking at it as a human thing. You may feel like you owe them something. And if you want to, you know, do work with minorities, and I'm assuming you'd want to do that in like the inner cities, that's an awesome thing. And that's a burden that God puts on certain people's hearts. And so please do that. There are desperate needs in the inner city for a lot of minorities. But legally, no. You don't know anything. But also from a Christian perspective, if you're living your life as a white person, black person, yellow person, red person, they're really the goal. What God wants you to do is celebrate the gift of your uniqueness. And there are differences in the races. Some people want to make it as if we're all the same. And obviously we're not. Everybody's different. There's no two people the same. And yet inside the races, so what I'm saying, inside the races, there are differences. And then outside the races, there are other differences. And those are to be celebrated. God has made this beautiful tapestry. And what we're seeing right now is the tapestry falling apart because one group feels like the other group got an unfair advantage. And even if that was true, which again, it's demonstrably not true, but even if it was true, what we really should be doing is just bringing those people up when possible, because there are certain large swaths of people who do not want to be helped. They want to be victimized. So for those people, all we can do is pray for them. There's nothing else you can do for them. They're going to try to make your life miserable. If they want to be a victim, there's really nothing you can do for them at this point. And that's a sad reality, and that's been around for, I guess, forever. I don't know if it's been around forever, but I know it's been around since the United States started, and I know we have plenty of black leaders from the 1860s and 70s and 80s that were talking about it back then. So, and they're on the record for that. I'm getting text messages here. Oh, thank you, Billy. Great to hear from you. Diane, also wonderful. You know, it'd be great. You could also go into the comment section rather than texting me. That would be awesome as well. All right, I'm going to wrap it up because I'm not really sure on the time where we're at. But I'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback. You obviously, some of you have my phone number. You can text me. You can comment. You can email me. And hopefully next Tuesday, we'll be back with another show.